Und bevor es heute losgeht mit dem On the Way to New Work Podcast, begrüßen wir unseren Werbepartner. Und in dieser Woche geht es um Ernährung, die eben auch ein wichtiger Teil von New Work ist. Es ist die Firma Frosta. Frosta ist eben ein Tiefkühlprodukthersteller, aber einer der besonderen Art, denn Frosta, und das erinnere ich noch sehr gut, als ich klein war, wusste ich schon immer, Frosta hat da dieses eigene Reinheitsgebot und ich wusste es nicht so ganz genau, aber ich wusste, die achten da sehr drauf. Und tatsächlich, es ist eben so, Frosta verzichtet über die normalen Regelungen hinaus auf Zusatzstoffe wie Geschmacksverstärker, wie Farbstoffe und Aromen. Also wirklich nur das, was ihr auch in die Pfanne haut, ist da auch drin. Und was haben die jetzt gemacht? Frosta hat eine neue Produktlinie, sehr proteinreiche Nahrung, aber ohne traditionelle proteinreiche Produkte wie Reis, Nudeln oder Kartoffeln. Das erreichen die über sehr kreative Produkte wie Erbsenpasta, Blumenkohlraspeln und so weiter. Schaut euch das mal an, frostashop.de. Es gibt 5 Produkte, 1 on top gratis. Insofern, wer abends keine Zeit hat, einfach mal ausprobieren. Ich denke, das lohnt sich auf jeden Fall, denn wie gesagt, gute Ernährung braucht man eben auch zum Arbeiten. Insofern, in diesem Sinne, viel Spaß mit der neuen Folge. Herzlich willkommen zum On the Way to New Work Podcast mit
Michael Trautmann
und Christoph Magnussen. Und wir sitzen in Berlin. Es ist einer unserer Podcast-Marathon-Tage. Wir sind aber 0,0 müde. Wir sind hellwach. Wir sitzen nämlich bei SAP. And now I will switch to English because we're a guest of Martin Wrzowski.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. I was training. You could have a little French end.
Yeah. I'm learning. It's Polish. And you are the chief designer and futurist of SAP.
Yes.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thanks for coming.
And you guys met actually 2 times already. What I remember was Michael came back with the idea that we have to change the concept of 1st of May for the On the Way to New Work podcast, because you said we have to like do something new every year or something. That's what I remember from you.
So do a conference, then do a book, then do a film. We come to this later. But the first part of our podcast always is that we help our listeners that they really get to know the person we have here. So what is your story? Where did you come from? What did you do before you became this at SAP? So
cool. Let's see how short I can make it. So I was born in Poland during the Soviet eras, and around 80s, beginning of 80s, my parents figured it out to escape. And they chose Sweden because we have an aunt there. And she actually much earlier fell in love with a Swedish tourist. So she was already established in Sweden. So I managed to escape. And 84, we did that. So I was 14.
Wow.
So teenager, Polish teenager in the 80s moving to Sweden, which was a little bit of a difference. For example, I didn't know that all of the music that existed actually existed. I didn't know that, you know, punk rock existed, for example. I kind of knew that there was something like that, but never had the idea that there's the span of rock and roll from Motorhead to Sex Pistols to, I don't know, Nina Hagen and so on was a thing. So that was a shock. And I started to play music. But obviously my parents have had different plans.
What was your instrument?
Guitar back then. Mm-hmm. And switch to bass eventually, because that's much cooler. And developed that kind of passion for music, and especially punk rock, which lives even today, because of the attitude. And that I was active in music, almost 20 years.
Wow.
Up and down, you know, released albums, touring, to pub gigs and pizzeria gigs and everything in between, you can imagine.
Mm-hmm. With different bands and different setups?
That changed. Some own bands and joined some other constellations. And, you know, it developed to a profession that I supported with work here and there and a little bit coming back to school, because I had to sort of drop out of university as well, because music was too important, I thought, to my parents' dismay, you know. Because I should have been, an engineer. This is why they created this new life, this new opportunity, this is why we left the Soviet regime, not to open new doors.
Punk rocker.
Come on, what's wrong with you? But that sort of music was the best education I ever had. You learn how to drive a band, which is an entity, how to get along with other very strong-minded people, how to print a T-shirt, how to promote it, how to make a poster, and how much you should take for a ticket. You need to learn that. Mm-hmm. So that's what we did. Plus the punk rock attitude. And that sort of shaped me. I need to say this because
That's what we love.
You know, it's a story I usually tell because I love it. So I'm 15, so the first very turbulent year is over. I have friends, which is great. And one of them said, "Hey, you should play guitar in our band." So what? I'm not even the creative type. I don't know. Yeah, no problem. So he puts a guitar in my knee. He had a saxophone, a couple of guitars. So he was into that thing. You know, music education in Sweden, like on a local level, is for free. You go to the music school and so on. Yeah. And puts the guitar there and he shows me this really easy chord you can take on a guitar with basically one or two fingers. And then you move that around and it sounds... Oh, that's three chords. You're in the band. So, seriously? But what he did was give you the sort of carefree confidence. Yeah. If you in the band just by doing that, you can do anything. Nothing can be wrong. And if you listen to punk, much of punk sounds like that. Yeah, that's wrong, but they don't seem to care. Oh. So I started to stretch my fingers and try to take like the most craziest chord I could take. And it sounded terrible, like, you know. And I ask Max, is that a chord? And he says again, well, now it is. And it's an attitude rather than that I kept with me and took with me too. You must try. You must investigate. You must be curious. And that led me to, you know, if you need to make a CD cover, you need to understand, I don't know, at least PageMaker, at least something back then. At least you need to know what Adobe was back then. And you need to know a friend with a computer. And maybe you need to help her or him to set it up. So you need to how to pull together a network. So I learned that technology. And from that, I started to teach that and consult in, you know, new media technologies because I educated myself a little bit in that. And from that, I'm making really... Long story short, so Sony was one of the customers. Sony Ericsson back then as a joint venture. I said, hey, do you want to teach that all your life? Do you actually want to make something? And I said, yeah, that's a good proposition. So I started at Sony, did that for many years, became a creative producer there in design. It's traditional design that we today maybe would call user experience design. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But everything from, you know, I know how to print stuff to how to make a little bit of moving media and so on, recorded because audio... I mean, playing music is pretty technical. You need to know all the gadgets, and you love the gadgets. The more gadgets you have, the happier you are. And then from that to creative producer, and in the end, I moved on to Huawei, another consumer part of Huawei there, moved to China.
And lived in China?
Lived in China for 2 years, in Shenzhen.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. You know, where all the manufacturers are, the city. That, what was it, 3,000 people 35 years ago? Now it's... 16 million.
That's just want to say it's exploding.
Crazy. So that was inspiring and teaches you a little bit to be humble, and which I needed as well, and patient, and how a company can be driven. You know, 140,000 people driven by for you as a Westerner, for me, by randomness. Seriously, the strategy is to not have a strategy. And this is where I understood that design is to not to build the next gadget, because come on, a computer can do it better than you in some years, already today. And how can I apply this systemic design? People will use it. How will they feel and how will they behave when they use it? As someone said, you know, you should be able to design a toothbrush or a political system with the same means, the same philosophy. And this is when the systemic thinking. So when SAP called, that felt somehow wrong, but so right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now SAP for 5 years.
So as I understand it correctly, or tell me if I could understand it correctly, you are not a designer by education. you're a designer by life experience, more a design thinker. Is this, I mean, this technology of design thinking, is this, or this process, is this something which resonates the way you're working, or how do you, how did you manage to convince people that you can become chief designer without?
Yeah, yeah, that's don't tell anyone. But, no, well, I guess practical. So I designed interfaces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before that, you know, posters, CD covers, T-shirts, whatever.
Yeah,
and then
it, yeah.
Interfaces for phones and services we had with music, with Sony and so on. So the practical aesthetical design, I knew it by heart. I could, you know, make beautiful stuff, at least I believed. Well, Sony did for a while as well, with my left hand in the end.
Mm-hmm.
It was really my second nature. So that was clear. And from your colleagues, you learned this... ergonomy, this behavioral science. You have always someone that is always someone or a bunch of people that is smarter than you that can tell you how to do things better. So on that way it goes. And I always had this, what do we do this for? What's the whole purpose of having mobile phones? I was for a while I was together with a bunch of colleagues in charge of the CyberShot rebranding of CyberShot as a pocket camera from Sony, mm-hmm. or this big brand, to a mobile camera experience. What would that mean? Mm-hmm. And these questions are more philosophical, but you need to approach them with a design mind. A person needs to see that her problems are solved. Her behavior is changed. Her world is better. It feels good and it works great. How do you achieve that? And I guess being a designer helps. Because designers are schooled in articulating something that doesn't exist yet, which, well, by definition, is in the future. Well, designers create futures. Usually these futures answer questions. What if this would be a great experience? How would we reach that? That's a question, and you reach that. But you brought up something else, design thinking, which is this method of innovating stuff from Stanford, that IDEO fostered through the world. I have no design thinking schooling. I'm not a certified design thinker. That's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
And also, already at Huawei, I worked with strategies, long-term strategies, as long-term as the Huawei could imagine, which wouldn't be so long-term, actually. They're very opportunistic. That worked super well for them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it ended that I hope I contributed at least a little percentile of that. We ended up as a third biggest volume-wise player on the market in consumer goods, which was a good achievement because just 2 years prior that, they were number eight, which is not even on the list, you know. It's you know, Apple, Samsung, and then who knows.
Yeah. And now we know who's that.
Now we know,
And but this was the next step. Then SAP. I mean, SAP is a B2B brand. It's a totally different. It's a software. What was the reason to join this company? I mean, we're very proud that we have a company like this in Germany. But
most valuable brand.
I know.
Since
I know.
The third brand is half at the value only BMW. Yeah, yeah. SAP intriguing because I was an SAP user. Years earlier, with older systems that Sony Ericsson used. They should have an upgraded many, many years ago. But so I have that, okay. And someone explained to me, no, it's not just a salary or project management or a vacation system that you fill in that and it goes to your boss. It's an IT solution. Oh, okay, what is that? So the consumer thinking, individual thinking to the systemic thinking, was intriguing. It was almost like, you know, back to this childhood dream, I will change the world. This punk rocker thing.
Yeah.
We're doing this to change the world. Really? Yeah, well, welcome to SAP. If you make a difference here, you make a difference for, I mean, come on, we're touching almost 80% of the world's transactions. If you make a difference here, you make difference for, and it better be good, by the way. So accountability comes in, which is back to this, you know, if you have a world movement like rock and roll, to save the world, save the planet, here's the opportunity. And it's not about making the next thing. It's about connecting the relation between things nobody connected before. And for me, that was futurology. It's future thinking, systemic thinking. Mm-hmm. Design the futures, and the rest will follow. So design the relationships we will have with each other in the future. The rest will follow.
So this was the job description from the very first beginning, or you evolved? You stupid question.
You know how it is. I mean, I guess many of the listeners as well, they find themselves somewhere in the already in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and they made their job up, right? The school never prepared you for whatever happens later. Okay, everybody knows this. You need to rewrite, to be always alert and curious and satisfied, and also know exactly why you're frustrated. You need to know what would I do instead. There must be a job description somewhere, but aren't we, since 5 to 10 years, entering an era where there is no plan anymore? Everything is emergence. I usually say the opposite to stability is not instability or chaos, which scares the hell out of people. Yeah. Oh, but you know, when I make a keynote or I make a case for this world that has so many possible futures, but that's chaos. No, it's not. The opposite to stability is emergence, evolution. So what you need to do is to be very alert and look, what's the next stepping stone? If we open this door, how many three other doors do we open? Which ones would be desirable to walk through? So it brings back the accountability to you. You know, it's, again, we're building a relationship with the rest of the world. And if you look at relationships, almost like with your friends and spouses and all that, you don't plan in a relationship, right? Because then you're a little bit of an asshole, you know, this calculated person. You go with them and see, how can we make this best? What do we wish we had as a relationship between each other? Or you and the market, you and the consumer, you and the customer. And if that's the relationship, this is how we are relevant for each other. What technology, what other things should we bring up? What business models should we bring up to make that relationship happen? So yeah, that was not description for that, I guess.
When you came into this company, I mean, 80,000, 60,000, whatever, many people.
Yeah.
How tough was it to explain this point of view? Because it's not the Joe Average point of view. It's a very sophisticated, a very modern approach. I would say I could imagine that companies like Google, Facebook, Apple have an approach like this. Waldorf, Germany, SAP,
yeah.
With all of respect, as I told you, I love this company and I love this brand. But probably it was not everyone said, well, Martin, we're doing this since 10 years. What are you telling us?
Yeah, not everyone. Yeah, that's true. And this is the amazing thing. I don't know who said it. If everybody agrees with you, you're probably doing something wrong. You found my boss then, who employed me, he had the courage, and he said, Martin, we're investing in design from the most sort of a really based, grounded perspective you can imagine. This is not a marketing, this is nothing like that. Let me introduce you to all the designers, our chief design officer. We have an officer in design that reports to the board in the end. Okay. So that convinced me. I talked to all these people, and they are so profoundly knowledgeable what design makes for systems, not only for interfaces or the paint, but the whole stack of technology, the whole stack of experiences, as we call it. And I said, oh, shit, guys, you're really good. Yes, we have a founder, Hasso Plattner, that started D-School at Stanford. Yeah. Because he realized he worked as a designer in back then in the 80s. He had customers with their fat fingers pointing at, we don't have that. What is that? Oh, I thought you would like it. No, I don't know what it is. That's agile development. That's change. That's design thinking. That's, you know, iterative process. Mm-hmm. When the House of Platinum saw this on the cover of the magazine, what was it? Was it Times? I don't know. I don't remember. Is it design thinking? I've been doing that for 20 years. We just lost it, our rail a little bit. I'm investing money in D-School. We need to change. We need to bring it back. It's not that we never had it. We had it profoundly built in our core DNA. The startup, the breakout of IBM, these guys that quit and started their own back then, we had it in our DNA. We just stepped out a little bit of the path, back on the path of innovation, discovery, iteration, all that is not formalized by Stanford. So design it. And when I discovered that, it's okay, man, I believe you. not only that, I want to be there. And the second thing was back to this, it's a big, big thing. Everybody has an opinion because probably the most clever people on this planet work for these companies and they work for SAP. You know, if you want an expert on, I don't know, how radio waves affect the office furniture, there's probably someone that has a really good paper about it in within SAP, and you can call her. So I was thinking, man, I mean, I'm at NASA. Mm. I'm at the NASA of work.
Wow. This is the title of our podcast. I'm at the NASA of work.
And I was that kid again. You know, goosebumps. Yeah. Oh, so anything is possible, but not that easily. You need, yeah. And this is where you start your discovery journey. And since everybody at SAP was at least open for new suggestions. But back to, we had this little discussion before this podcast, why or half of the philosophers of the world coming from Germany. It also this feeling, everybody is a thinker here. Everybody has a little bit of thinking and tinkering, tinkering like in engineering, in their blood. I have so much to learn. So it was, yeah, long answer to a simple question, why did you start at SAP? But it is a giant. It is 47 years of history. It's 47 years of changing the world of work through software. And it's hopefully another 10, 20, 40 years of profound change for something better. And it's up to us. And when it's up to us, I felt like this punk rocker. Wait a second, I am on the barricade. What do we do now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Wow, that's a new perspective. That's a picture. Huh? That's a complete new perspective.
Let's buy stocks tomorrow.
No, that's I mean, and it helps a lot. Like understanding, like why would you have a design department? Of course, I wouldn't think you have it, but also a design like with that mission behind it. Because like when we entered your office, the first thing you see is like all the books, and it's way more creative than. than many offices I see from designers usually. So I can see there's a lot happening here if I look around. So what is it, the typical workday when you started here?
That's
and what does it look now?
That changed. You know, a couple of things I had to learn very quickly. I was quite rude and said, yeah, but you're doing everything wrong and all these things you say. And happy to see that people at SAP are really decent folks, really decent folk. They let you to let you say these things and put them in a little bit bigger perspectives. Because we can talk about new work and all that. However you twist it, the progress of science, engineering into society and different layers in society, into politics, democracy, progress of humanity is built on thorough work and planning. All the Industrial Revolution builds on repeatable results and Ford and all, you know, creating and working industry. Whatever you can measure, you can affect, you know, Peter Drucker and all that. If you walk into a room and say, yes, but innovation and disruption and transformation, you're actually, you're pulling the carpet out of your, underneath your own feet and you will fall. These people created the possibility to discover that we need to change differently today. And we will always need to be these folks, these engineers, to keep the promise, deliver according to the plan. Because there is a hospital running out there that we run. There is a supply chain that cannot fail because that drives that and that part of that country. This is really important. That's one. There are designers that need to think about exactly where to place that because this goes on an equipment where the failure rate can only be 0.1. It cannot be, yeah, if I click there and there, who cares? This is not, yeah, your everyday website. These are critical systems that we also run. We also run, you know, everyday websites like iTunes and so on. But that you need to appreciate that. The next step is, why do we do this? And I usually bring this question since a couple of years to me, our customers, and our partners. Why are you relevant 10 years from now? Okay?
Good question.
And the reason I'm bringing it so hard, if you cannot describe it pretty eloquently, well articulated, say almost like a design brief or engineering brief, you will not be relevant 10 years from now. So you need to be able to write it down. That's future design. And if you go to your design colleagues and they're working hard with the engineers on something that will be released just 4 weeks from now, a month, That's also in the future, right? Everybody's working for a desirable future. Is it 4 weeks from now or 40 years from now? It shouldn't actually matter, but it should be connected. And this is what I think was the biggest challenge. We all working for the same thing. We take small and really big decisions every day, like vectors with a strength and a direction, yeah? Like in math. Do they point in some kind of a spectrum of desirable futures, or are we just taking chances? Are we designing our own futures, or are we waiting for someone else to hand them to us? Mm-hmm. And we hope we like it or we don't. So that was the biggest discovery, that there are layers, there are horizons of innovation. And this is where I already at Huawei, this big company, when I worked with strategy, left hands on design, because I discovered all these colleagues are so much better than I in doing that. And they are in love with that process of hands on designing. I'm in love with where are we headed. And you can call it innovation, you can call it transformation. For me, it's still design. But so this is why I kept this design chief designer. We can exchange it any day, because that's not the hands-on traditional. And I think the role of the traditional design is changing. We will see designers in politics. Mm-hmm. That's what I think, because you design the futures for example, a society. Yeah, may it be a country. But if you're steering and making laws, which is your design buttons, and legislation and outlooks and visions, I mean, who designing the Europe 2035? Where's that design brief? Have you seen one?
No.
No? I haven't. Yeah.
We just see the deconstruction brief.
So
it was not a proper brief. It was just a bet. Yeah, well, what do you want? Brexit? Remain? Say what you want? It was no brief. It was just a
gamble. So what I'm thinking of, you said we're in times, and I strongly believe that where you cannot have a plan. Nobody has a plan. Like it's going so fast in many directions, very complex. And the way you work as a designer can help to tackle also that future. Is that also a way you would direct it? Because I'm always looking into, there are so many things in technology happening. The curve is taking off exponentially in many areas. And you said at Huawei you didn't have a strategy, and it looked like you were like walking left and right, but obviously you didn't. So how is design helping in that future? Or is it helping? Or is there anything else for a company, especially also like SAP?
Yes, that's a great topic. And we can almost leave design. We can use design, but we need to remember that we use that as a structuring of a spectrum of possibilities to go to.
Mm-hmm.
You can call it innovation. Mm. Yeah, some would do that. You would call it ever-growing transformation need. Well, you can also call it design. We will change that, but let's call it innovation. Why do you need innovation? Or innovate a curiosity? Yeah? Why do you need this acceptance of, or you need to love change, yeah? Embrace change. What's the next change that will happen? You know, if you're in controlling and administration, you may be, that's the last thing you ask every Monday morning. But that's wrong in the perspective that whatever you control and manage and administrate today leads to something else. What is that? So this is why we think in these three horizons. I just touched upon this. And this is what this innovative and curious thinking can do. The first horizon is, I mean, do your job. Keep your promise. If you have a product and you actually planned it, traditional planning, as we said before, deliver it. Otherwise, you're just not nice to people and to market, and you will lose. That's the first. Second, if you know how to do this, you have your ecosystem, and everything is an ecosystem. That's another notion we can unpack in another 1.5 hour podcast. But everything, you have your partners, you have your startups, you have your academia, you have your customers, obviously. They are an ecosystem with the common skills and abilities and passions of this ecosystem. What would be your forecast? That's your second horizon. That's the adjacent innovation. Something that has not happened. We have not really planned it, but we sit together and see what would be the possibilities to go further beyond our current abilities. And there is a third horizon, which is the transformative innovation. And many people would say, well, cool, then you think even further and you forecast even further, 10 years, 15 years ahead. And here's the trick. If you can forecast to the third horizon, it's not the third horizon. It's still the second horizon, but very, very far. You cannot forecast to the third horizon. This is when planning doesn't work anymore. Forecasting and all the business activities that we know and love, that keeps us alive, the lights on, and keeps the everybody out of jail, you know, and salaries coming. That's good. Great job. Now, let's appreciate the ideas that, I don't know, like the gentleman you showed me before. They said, maybe 40 years from now, we will spend one third of our lives focusing on our passions, contributed in a networked system of manufacturing. And maybe one third of that we will be paid a salary. That's a crazy idea. How to get there? You cannot forecast to that society or that kind of work. Well, you put it there as an idea. That's vision. Mm. Where is it? Here. Before you do things right, which is basically based on resources, planning, you need to know what the right things are. Mm. And like back to philosophy.
Effectiveness, efficiency. Yeah. First, you have to do the effective things, so do the right things.
The relevant things, I would say.
Yeah.
And then do them right, which is, put them efficiently and optimized on the market. Yeah. Schopenhauer said talent is hitting the targets no one can hit. You win. Mm-hmm. You tried, but I was first. I hit it first. I win. That's normal marketing or market behavior. But genius is hitting the target no one can see. So who makes us see?
Mm.
Well, visions do. So how do you have your collective mind put together and say, this is why we will be relevant 10 years from now, 15 years from now, 8, 3. That's our vision. This is what we see. That's the right things to do. And the people go, how do we do them right? Good question. I was just about to ask you. Mm. Because you're the engineers, you're the economists, you're the behavioral scientists, you're the marketeers, you're the customer-facing people that know intimately, should know empathically where these customers are headed. Let's bring them together. And that's the third horizon.
Mm-hmm. And working on the third horizon means that you have always have to dream to really try to catch the stars. And you can't stop when you have one star. You have to do it in scenarios. And you have to then find out, is there a way that leads us and our company now to this? Or how do you do this on a daily basis? How do you work on the third horizon?
Yeah, that's cool. That's the most exciting. I know we all know the classic moonshot, John F. Kennedy. We're taking a guy, we're shooting him all the way to the moon. Same guy comes back alive. Yeah. See you 10 years. That's it. That was the brief. People, how? We don't even have the math.
Yeah.
So how do you do? I think, as you say, again, you cannot plan for a certain future, but you can understand what would be the vision, the spectrum of possible futures.
Yeah, that's what I mean, spectrum.
So we call it the future fabric. Mm-hmm. So what would weave a future if it existed? Well, I don't know. Blockchain exists. It's a technology we didn't invent it. Some people really do really decent self-driving cars. So automation is hitting real, artificial intelligence levels. Cool. What more is happening? Oh, globalization is happening. It's not us. It's not IBM. It's not, H&M. It's happening. So objectively, you observe the future and put the dots there. That's your future fabric, your future map. But then you get a little bit more subjective. You go to, globalization, blockchain, wait a second, the rise of the middle class everywhere. There's no third or second world. It's just the world. India, the most populous country in the world just in 10 years. Okay, wait a second. If you connect these dots, we will have youngsters enabled with very cheap devices to drive their own startups and maybe want to do transactions that without overhead costs, maybe on blockchain. So tenders go, I don't know, and automate manufacturing that they buy per minute from a big factory that they don't even know where it exists because they just click, I need more 100 of these units. They order it while drinking coffee. Well, that's a business. That's a scenario, right? You just made a narrative. So you moved from future fabric to future narratives. Some people do really scary narratives, Hollywood. I'm not bashing them. I'm really enjoying the movies, guys. You're doing a great job. And it's so well articulated, by the way. Your design briefs for the future are the scariest ever. But they are just not likely to happen. And they mess with people's brains. So what we're trying to do from these possible futures, all possible futures, the hundreds of them, thousands, which are the desirable ones? The ones that we really would like to happen. You're getting a little bit more subjective. And since you're big, like SAP or Google or whatever, don't do bad stuff. So ask.
Don't be evil, yeah.
Yeah, as they say. And we want to say that we need to improve people's lives and make the world run better, which is so pretentious you will never achieve it. So we always need to work for it. You're never done. Every Monday morning, 2045, you will still have the opportunity to make the world run better. So choose wisely by discussing with your ecosystem, and we touched upon it before. From that, you go even more subjective and even more sticking your head out. What would be, if that would be the desirable futures, in which futures would we play a significant positive role as SAP, together with our ecosystem and our friends, our family, and out on the market? Well, this and this and this and this story we want to bring out there. Okay, now you have a strategic point of view, as we call it. And first then, you can have a strategy. And after strategy, I think most of the listeners know what to do.
Very, very fascinating. How do you organize, or how many departments are working? It's not just you and your team. It's different departments. How do you organize this?
That's the tricky part. We've been thinking like this for a handful of years. Mm-hmm. And we realized that we kind of pioneering this area. So we asked, we have big customers. We can ask Google. They are a partner of us. How do you guys do?
You talk to customer. Okay,
we talk to customer all the time. We did this, that worked, and actually this department, that department still don't talk to each other. I said, we experienced that too. All this human stuff happens. You need to restructure, reorganize. And then you have to encourage people, guys, we will not reorganize you because you need to deliver in the first, touching the second horizon. You need to be left in peace. And they say, yes, we love it. But hi, guys, you... Maybe you need to, if we don't reorganize you 3 times per year, you should be worried. Because then we're not innovating an approach to see the next door, to open next door, emergence and evolution rather than planning. We're just planning. So these discussions will be ever ongoing, and we reach out to as many as possible. I think we made an impact that is positive, a little bit of a success with this kind of thinking, this vision thinking and strategic thinking long term, since Jürgen Müller, our boss, became an executive board member just the 1st of January. So it's fresh. And we aim to bring this kind of thinking to 90,000, 95,000 something people. Our women and men in the thinkers and tinkerers that will bring this, run the world better. Exactly to these future stories that we want to see. The content of it, which is the 3 A's, the automation, the augmentation, and the autonomy of people at works.
So these are your three pillars or drivers? Or
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. These are and they together, the 3 A's, lead to a fourth result that drives you even further. And that is, if you have the mundane, the repetitive, some people call it the bullshit work, automated. If your ecosystems are ever more complex because the world is growing, look at Alibaba and Amazon, how they get all that network together, that will be even more complex. If you have that autonomously self-organizing, that's the second A, and you as a decision maker augmented to superhuman level of decision making because, machines, human ingenuity and machine intelligence, we call it, then you can focus on something new. You say just save time. For example, why am I here? How can we engage and build new relationships with the market? Why would it be relevant 3, 5, 10 years from now? So you can look at your purpose and maybe start to quantify and qualify your purpose to your market, to your stakeholders, and to your shareholders even. So these four pillars, the automation, the augmentation, the autonomy, and the new markets and business models driven by your purpose belong together in this machine intelligence, human ingenuity, in an ever, more symbiotic, empathic way of working together.
That's what you try to train into 95,000 heads of the company.
I just started. I hope they don't hear this podcast before.
You tell us when we can start. Yeah. We're very flexible.
No, but we've been talking about this for a year. We think it's a new kind of an intelligence at work, or smartness, or human ingenuity, machine. Yeah, we call it the intelligent enterprise. We need to call it something, and I kind of like it. Because enterprise, you know, enterprise is for me almost, I'm not an English speaker, this is my second, third language, but it's almost, it's very close to adventure.
Yeah, it's I love enterprise much more than just company.
Yeah, me
enterprise
too.
Enterprise is something which is, yeah, it's just brave, seeing new horizons. I love it.
Who was it? Was it Richard Branson? I forget it. It was something like this. You know how we say sometimes to privately, we say, yeah, but that's not none of your business, which means none of your business. It doesn't mean that economically, it's almost personally. Well, the color of my underwear, that's not your... By that, we mean we should take business as personal business, and enterprise should be as adventure. Mm-hmm. And this is what we are, an adventure here, and we're discovering where we should be. And we think these four dimensions will support this new intelligence at work, this intelligent enterprise. And in the end, will support this classic, you know, platforms, technologies, applications, working together to make you superhuman, to make you autonomous in a network, to make you augmented and automated so you can focus on new adventure. Mm-hmm.
Hier kommt die kurze Werbeunterbrechung. Es geht gleich weiter mit dem On the Way to New Work Podcast und wir haben in dieser Woche ein sehr cooles Produkt dabei, beziehungsweise eine sehr coole Firma, Son of a Tailor, ein Unternehmen aus Kopenhagen. Und was macht Son of a Tailor? Ihr bekommt dort maßgeschneiderte T-Shirts. Das ist ein Fashion-Tech-Startup und klar, ich weiß nicht, wer das von euch kennt, also ich trage sehr viel T-Shirts zum Leidwesen von Michael, der ab und zu mal sagt, ich könnte mir auch einen Anzug rüberschmeißen. Nein, ich trage sehr gerne T-Shirts und tatsächlich ist es so, dass ihr bei Son of a Tailor mithilfe von Technologie euch vermessen lassen könnt sozusagen und dann wird das Ganze genau auf euch zugeschneidert. Und wer von euch gerne coole T-Shirts trägt, die auch gut sitzen, für den ist das Richtige, schaut es euch mal an. Gerade wenn die Standardkleidergrößen von S bis XL nicht jedem Mann von euch gerecht werden. Und ihr kriegt unter sonofatailor.com/newwork mit dem Gutscheincode newwork19 auch noch einen Rabatt obendrauf. Also, einfach mal reinschauen. Das ist das Produkt. Und jetzt viel Spaß mit dem Rest der Folge. Wow. I'm just thinking of... which companies? I think it's Microsoft. I wasn't too sure where the CEO. I think it's Microsoft. Satya Nadella actually changed the strategy from like one word, Windows, into two words, cloud and AI. I'm now a bit black and white, but that's basically what he did, and it was a very bold move. But he paired that with, and a lot of people from Microsoft say that actually now from going away from being a knowing organization to becoming a learning organization, way more into like, we don't know where we're going, but we have to let go of this knowing attitude. We know that's the strategy and we know where we're in 10 years. And a lot of what you were elaborating on feels similar in that direction, which is then like going perfectly aligned with this. Okay, we don't have a plan where we're going, but we need this whole organization to deal with that, like a kid that is learning.
I mean, first let's. Yeah, people love simple explanations, but you're absolutely right. For the first, there is absolutely a plan for what we do in the first horizon, and we think, we hope it's watertight.
Yeah.
And touching the second one, it must be inspiring and safe enough for our ecosystem to walk in and put money on the table together with us to reach the third horizon. Doesn't have a plan.
How, like, and I love that picture because there are a lot of companies that say, well, we cannot let go of what we're doing. Let's take the example from Nokia saying, or the Telekom, for example, when we learned in the podcast with your friend, Michael's friend from Deutsche Telekom, Hans Christian, who then said, we actually allowed everyone internally to use WhatsApp. And I'm like, what did you do? You made billions of profit with the text message. Like, what are you doing? And he said, yeah, but that's reality. That's what's happening. And so this kind of gives a plan of like, how could you structure things?
Yes.
But how would you split it up in terms of how much is in the first horizon, how much in the second horizon? How do you know how much effort to put in the third horizon?
Do
you
know that's an investigation. Because if you do have a vision and are three A's resulting in new markets and business models, and who knows what they will be, who knows, right? Mm. You don't know. There's our vision. Our strategy is very simple. Make everything a little bit more intelligent wherever we can. Mm-hmm. And since we SAP, it can be a little bit actually everywhere. So we have a big task and we love it. And then how do you split it? Well, we know technology, that's for sure. What are the technological areas that we could focus on? What are the behavioral work, new work areas where we could put humans to be absolutely augmented so they can focus on high value work, as we call it, and automate the low value mm-hmm. tasks, human tasks. So a doctor actually can spend time with patients mm-hmm. so she can, you know, feel really helpful, where, I don't know, Red Cross can focus on saving lives rather than bureaucracy. That would be great, no? These are the things. So we have these focus on these and these areas. Then which of these could we explore? Let's do that. And you explore with engineering, with behavior science, with talking to your customers. And then you prototype. You have concepts that should be really vibrant, well-described, that lead somewhere. 3 months from now or, you know, 10 years from now, it should really show you that future. And then when you, oh, man, I think we can prove this concept. You have a proof of concept. This is engineering. This is core, you know, as I say, between science fiction and science fact, there's science and hard work. That's it. And we do science and hard work. And when you prove that concept, maybe you can front run it with some customers. And you don't have to guess how much you divide to this and this horizon. This is the discovery moment. For some parts, we need to change so fundamentally. I mean, going to the cloud and being a leader there didn't take, you know, a snap of a finger. You need to focus. That's delivery right now. And we're doing it. We're putting all sorts of resources on that. But investigating how quantum computing DNA coding can help us in the future. These are cutting edge, curious investigations that inform us only. And we don't have to be 10,000 people to do that. But we need to have the awareness to put it on this future fabric. It must be a dot, and someone will explain to you what it could mean for us in the future. So it's a very fluent story. And I don't think we know how that is split. We go as we see the future develop, as we want it to develop with our ecosystem.
I really like the concept of the three horizons. I heard in my industry, in the marketing industry, I heard a similar model that Coca-Cola is working since years. They say there's a rule. I don't know if it's still in place, but a friend of mine who was the marketing director told me. So we spend 70% of our marketing budget for things where we really, really know that they work. They help to sell us our bottles for sure. We knew the performance indicators and so on. We spend 20% of our marketing budget into things where we're quite sure. We have a good guess that it works, and we spend 10% of our money into things where we have no fucking idea if it works. I think this is something which is just marketing, but I can compare it with this three horizons, and I like the concept that you don't. I think companies which are spending 100% of their attention for their first horizon, they can come into trouble.
Risking their business.
And if I learned this when I was the first time in Menlo Park at Facebook, and I entered the building, and there was a big poster which says, if we don't create the thing that will kill Facebook, someone else will, Mark Zuckerberg. I said, what? That's what he said? You have to create the thing that will kill. And I think you need to...
Definitely a good comparison. It's almost like a scale of these three horizons with the axis, you know, market acceptance and technology maturity. In the third horizon, market doesn't know what you talk about yet. And the technology maturity, I mean, look at quantum computing or look at some parts of the blockchain movement, which mm-hmm. is now mature. But these technologies and the market, they are out there in a little bit of a very blue sky thinking. What we, and I think we, and I mean as this Homo sapiens should do, it's try to have an opinion, an educated and passionate argument about. That's it. And exchange. I don't know who said it. The next big thing, it's not a thing. It's a relation between things you've never seen coming together before.
Wow.
It will be so many things. And we are in the business of simplifying complexity. So we are embracing this complexity, really looking at it. Because this is a complex thing. We don't know and we don't know. That's the scale. So that's complex. And how many parts will play? I mean, legislation comes into blockchain in some perspectives. Mm. We don't do DNA, but for folks that are on that horizon, on that cutting edge, they must think about, you know, societal behaviors and politics. We don't know there either. So, yes, you need to invest in the complexity so you can simplify it and have at least a strategic point of view. And from that, you can say, we call it innovation curation. Mm-hmm. So you curate it like a... I can curate ideas in a museum, for example, mm-hmm. or in a workshop. Ah, that's a good idea. Let's put it there and let it mature. Or how you do wine and foods. Wow. Oh, that's going to be a great wine in 10 years. You know, you curate.
That's the way how you treat your Horizon 3 bubbles or however we
call and that. 2 and 1.
Okay.
As well. They are all curated. Mm-hmm. Not all of them. We are not there yet. Mm-hmm. I don't think we will ever be there. This is how complex it is. Mm-hmm. If I would say we curate everything, I would not be understanding my own business.
In the museum, you have a cellar where you have lots of other things as well. So you can't...
Dozens of people that are so knowledgeable. They say, oh man, this relates actually to that expression. I think we should show that next to each other because that would give people a different idea. So idea association, which we know is in the innovator's DNA, mm-hmm. any innovators associate different ideas, is part of this curation. Yeah? So back to building narratives of future. Yeah.
How do you, like... If you look, I have many questions, but one of the questions is, if we talk about curating, showing things, and explaining it to people, and then communicating it to people, like what kind of stuff do you use? Is it like what is the result of the work? Are there many results? Like how would you communicate new narratives? How would you use a lot of the knowledge from different people? Mm. Are there actual tools to do that?
Well, we're trying to prototype our concepts. And prototype usually sounds like a thing you can hold in your hand. It can be. We don't do much hardware, really. But for us, it would be software and engineering. Mm. But a prototype could be also a narrative. This is how people would use this piece of software. Or even better, this is how a piece of a supply chain would work. Because that's something that will be there. Finance, manufacturing, from design to manufacturing, from order to cash, whatever processes you have out there, you can make something better. You can describe them. So it can be paperware, basically a good, educating, insightful paper that gives the idea to your partners, to your customers, and to yourself. This is important. To your colleagues that haven't spent their time with heads in this topic for the last 2 months. It could be slideware. Hey, guys, let me show you something that could work like this. And you make something up. And yeah, that would be pretty desirable. That's quite a desirable future. But that, we have no idea how to do. That part you did just in minute 5, I don't get it. Yeah, I know. That's going to be hard, right? Yeah, we don't have that technology. Can we manufacture that technology? Can we engineer it? Can we buy it? Can we partner up with it? All the way to software. Hey, guys, this is actually such a low-hanging thing. So we engineered as far as we could by hand right now, and it runs. How do we bring it to scale? I mean, SAP scale? Is it an SAP strategic point of view to bring this to scale? Yeah, let us look at this curation map. Yeah, actually it is. Okay, who do we call? this is mostly viable for manufacturing industry or for healthcare. Yeah, it is. Okay, you calling the customers, you calling the partners, we bring in the engineers. Let's see what we can do with it. Mm. And that would be the conceptual prototyping to real front running applications. And in the end, wow, I think we can scale this.
What were things that you were, that happened, not only SAP, not only software-wise, innovative-wise, device-wise, that were really surprising you, where you were like, fuck, I didn't see that coming?
When? It's so hard to unlearn. You know, once you're surprised and then you accept, then you don't remember that you were surprised. You take it for granted, you know? Yeah. Ah, let's see. Blockchain? Actually, blockchain. I was blinded by the currency play, the digital currencies around blockchain. And when I understood as far as I could the technology behind it, someone had to tell me. I mean, really, like put me like a pupil, like a student in a chair. Martin, you haven't understood shit. This is actually a network that educates itself about its own knowledge. A car knows where it's going and why. Not you. Can you? It was like, that was a new door. I remember that moment. And it's still, you know, I talked with a entrepreneur from Brazil. She was talking about, we were talking about this DNA spray. So you can mark. We obviously talked about the first use case, which was spraying at the thieves in retail when someone shoplifting.
You have to explain it. Sorry, like you say it, but
yeah, I know. It's a spray that puts a DNA on your jacket.
Okay. Yeah.
So and DNA is unique, like a fingerprint.
Yeah.
But since you put it in aerosol, it's really easy to distribute. It doesn't have to, you know, shoot paint or so. You paint it. So put, oh, that blue guy over there.
Yeah.
No, it's invisible. You don't know, so you don't even hide. Besides, the guys say, yeah, we have you on camera and you spray it and actually, your jacket says you were, yeah, that's that DNA. So she said, how about spraying, you know, vegetables? Brazil, big manufacturer of produce to eat. And if the farmers overproduce 1 year, the prices go down. That's too bad. If the rain comes, they're out of business. It's not like they can afford a big insurance with a bank, especially if you're a farmer that owning, you know, just 5 acres over there. You don't belong to this big industry. Mm. How can they buffer? So, well, you spray every kilo of carrots, of beets, whatever, potatoes. So, you know, I did that. That goes to a bank of foods, and I get that as a buffer on blockchain.
Yeah.
Very loose thought. I know some of the listeners would kill me now for this very abstract thought, but this is where the doors start to open, and I need to unlearn again what this could be used for. Yeah.
And you just said it's so hard to unlearn. I mean, to find something where you think like, I didn't see that coming, because many people then think afterwards, oh, of course, we have the iPhone for 15 years. I'm like, oh, it's 12 years old. How does it work? But how do you unlearn?
Yeah. I think is for me, it is to observe stuff I usually don't observe. So I have a really hobbyist, I need to stress that, interest in neurology and behavioral science, especially in human biases. You know, we take stupid decisions as humans sometimes. We make choices that are closer to us rather than the better for us. I mean, retail knows exactly how to play that game. You know, they place the chewing gum just when you're leaving the store. Do I need chewing gum? And the hands just pick up one. You didn't even answer that question because we bias to this indulgence or whatever. This is superhuman. Not superhuman. This is very human. So I'm looking at that because maybe that gives me a new angle. How do we take bigger decisions? Should I employ that supplier? Should we present ourselves with the proposition to the market now or 3 months from now? Because you always want to, let's go to market, damn it, we just spent, yeah? And so on. Maybe you're biased. Maybe you should have your team meetings in the morning because you're a better person in the morning than in the evening. You know, in the evenings, you're a little bit of a drag, you're a little bit tired and so on, and people don't want to listen to you. In the morning, you're sunshine. Who can tell you that besides your friends that know you? how about a system that learns about you and from you safely and securely? Okay, let's say that. without policing you and become your best friend. And we have this system that we just started to investigate. We call it the co-pilot. That actually you can ask, hey, I have a problem with a couple of suppliers. Do you have any suggestions? And since you're looking at this piece of your, say, equipment or offering to a market, we can feel the context in the background and suggest the suppliers that would be viable whilst this one is offline or maybe not available or out of stock.
So it's AI, not artificial, it's augmented intelligence.
Augmented intelligence. Yeah. Who said it? Kevin Kelly maybe said it. Someone said it that, you know, it's not artificial. That's nice and good and technical, but the smartest app in the world is the one that makes you smarter. End of story.
Yeah.
There's no other description. There can be fantastic app and mind-blowing technology. You understand or only half of it. If it doesn't make you smarter, it's not smart.
Yeah.
So it must augment you. This is why this A is so important, augmented humanity. So this is how I'm trying to unlearn by the read stuff I really don't understand.
Very cool. this leads us to our question. Where did you get inspiration? Do you have books where you say, well, if you really want to understand me, you should read this 2, 3, 4 books?
The table is much
again, it's books. So hard to remember. I was really impressed by Yuval Harari's books, all three of them.
I think read all three?
Yeah. And I will read them again now. I listen to them. I can't read really. I don't have the attention span. But when I'm walking and so on, books really build a world in my head.
I had two of them. I started with the Future book then with the 21
Lessons.
And now I will start with his first book. I don't know why I did it this way around, but
they work
amazing,
independently.
Amazing books.
Yeah. That man did his homework, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I wish I had this.
Yeah.
Diligence and
I'm
not that disciplined.
I can't remember that I was impressed so deeply by an author like
that. And now I'm reading Life 3.0 Tegmark.
Mm-hmm.
And before that I read Kevin Kelly's What Does Technology Want? The Inevitable. So he has this fantastic hypothesis that technology actually is, some of the things are inevitable. He takes the example, you know, someone could say that they predicted the iPhone, but they would be wrong. But what they predicted was that we would have more computational power in our pockets and communicate peer-to-peer effortlessly and for free. That was in humanity's path. That's what technology wanted. iPhone? Yeah. One of these things that could have happened. It happened to happen. So I read that too.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, back to your question, actually, how do you unlearn? I mean, there are really clever people that spend all their lives in creating these narratives of possible futures, engaging and immersive. So I'm a huge fan of science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Some movies I see first just for entertainment. I mean, who doesn't love Terminator in the end? It's pure bullshit, but it's so entertaining. I love it. Interstellar and all these things. Oh, yeah. And then you can see movies like Her several times.
Yeah.
And suggestion, just if you guys have the time, have, besides the glass of wine, also a notepad. And take a little bit notes. Oh, what does this suggest when, for example, she says, well, I'm having 1,700 conversations right now.
Yeah.
Sorry for the spoiler, guys. But there is a moment. Or Arrival. Have you seen that movie?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's about language. It's a drama.
Amazing, amazing movie. Yeah.
And now if language is redefined as so powerful thing to tell you a new concept of, for example, time, just by listening and understanding that language, wow, what are we missing with our language? And everybody knows that companies go to hell because of bad communication. So how can we approach language? And we know also that language-to-language communication between us and systems, well, let's start with stupid chatbots, but actually to have decent conversations with your business, this is, by the way, one thing we'd want to provide, that is based on language. So Arrival takes you out of your comfort zone to what language could mean. And maybe unlearn something in the end. So yeah,
Ready Player One. Did you watch Ready Player One?
Yes, yeah. I like that. I need to see it again because I only saw it for entertainment. Yeah. I need to see it again from the philosophical perspective.
Same with me, yeah.
And everybody says, obviously, you should read the book, so I maybe do that as well.
Cool. Nice. What would you recommend to someone who is like 12 years old at the moment?
I think I would stick, at least for now, with what many people that are much more clever than me invented that we should embrace, and that is unlearning. Or do not learn something maybe so vertically that you become a very specific expert on this little sliver of an occupation, for example, legislation. If you're 12 and imagine yourself as an expert in taxing, international taxing and laws, in this specific perspective, there will be an AI that will do that. But if you're interested in relationship between people from an economical perspective, that's a much broader field where you also touch relationships, so psychology, behavioral science, politics, finance, you need to understand that. So be curious. That's the important thing. Back to punk rock. We need more rock and roll in business. So how can you shake the boat and your own boat? You know, like Motorhead did, like the Ramones did, and Dead Kennedys back then. Like we discussed Kraftwerk. How did they come up with that idea? I mean, it seems out of the blue, but it isn't. It's a remix of life. They kind of borrowed a little bit here, a little bit. How can you be a fusionist of ideas rather than follow one simple idea? How can you be orchestrator and organizer of these ideas for yourself? Because whatever you learn will be known and evenly distributed just 5 years from now. Where are you then? What's your next step? So how you learn to discover, that's the biggest learning.
Wow.
Thank you very much.
Just say
it was amazing.
Yeah,
thank you.
I didn't promise too much, huh?
No, not at all. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for your questions.